Okay, hey guys, this is Adam of the Dollar Bin, and obviously the person starring in this interview needs no introduction in and of himself. However, this interview itself requires a little introduction, and that is to say that we recorded this interview back before HeroesCon 2010, so that's, I think we hit this one up in May, so it's been a few months since we started this. When we kicked off this interview with Neil Adams, the Batman Odyssey had not yet come out. Now it's, of course, October, and quite a few issues of Batman Odyssey have come out at this point. So keep that in mind. Also, Neil's going to talk a lot about Batman Odyssey, and if by chance you haven't picked any issues up yet, after you finish listening to this interview, there's no way you can listen to this and not be interested in picking up the first issue of Batman Odyssey that you see. I wanted to make sure I got this interview out this week because I'm headed to New York Comic Con, and Neil Adams will be there, and I definitely wanted to make sure we had this up so that when he asked me about it, I could say, yeah, of course it's up, Neil. It's awesome that people love it. So that's your hint to go ahead and leave some comments so that I can show Neil that the people love the interview when I'm there in New York. Not that he cares. But I wanted to make sure I got it up. You know, I'm going to hopefully meet him and talk to him for a bit. And the reason it took so long is something you'll discover. This interview was a 3-hour interview. The last interview that you may recall that we did that was a 3-hour interview was with Christopher Priest. It ended up being a very entertaining, rather exciting 2-parter, which still gets constant hits on our website. Go Christopher Priest. This one right here is possibly going to be a 3-parter. I cut very little from this show. It's one of the reasons it was so daunting of an undertaking. I knew that there was going to be very little I could cut, and I knew I was going to be in for a exciting ride when I started editing this one, mainly due to the enthusiasm and entertaining value that Neil Adams brings to this interview. So definitely make sure you're strapped in when you go to listen to this one, because it's going to be one hell of a ride. Again, multi-parter. Later in part 2, Terrence is going to join us. But right now, myself, Adam, Joel, and the living legend Neil Adams himself.
I just wanted to thank you for taking some time to talk to us tonight. I know we've been going back and forth for a while, and I know
That's
how busy
true.
You are.
I am. That's true. You got it
right. So keep it short,
take a
right?
Long time
no long-winded questions?
Oh, good luck. Luck on that. My goodness.
<That's>...
They wanted me to do a Batman comic book. I'm now doing 12 issues, one story. They said, why didn't you stop writing? I don't know. It seemed like 12 issues to me.
Is it up to 12 issues now? Last thing I read was it was supposed to be 6, and then you decided on 8. Is it 12 now?
No, it's always been 12. They just lied.
Well, that's a good starting place then. It is coming out in July. Is that correct?
I don't know. They never tell me. It's a comic book company. They never tell the artist what's going to happen.
Last thing I'd heard on the solicitation was that it was coming out next month.
Well, there you go. Well, I can tell you this. The first book is in, and I'm inking the second and coloring the second. So, must be right. I think you're right. I don't bother with that petty stuff. I just do the pages.
Just in the creative end.
I don't think it's creative. They do the creative. You have to get it right now. I do the business. They do the creative. I know I'm confusing you, boys. I know.
Who has the harder task then? You or them?
You know what? You came into my house. You're just going to have to play with the rules.
Well, let me ask you this, since you are going back to Batman, what made you decide to go back to a character you really put your stamp on all those years ago? What made you decide you wanted to do that?
You've been lifting up Batman's cape and looking at that stamp, haven't
you? Yes, sir. You left a pretty big stamp on it.
Well, I don't know. You know, it just seemed to me that a whole lot of Batman stuff has been left lying around on the floor. And I was on my way over to DC Comics, and I saw this Batman stuff lying around. And by the time I got there, I said, you know, I think there's a story here. You guys left a lot of stuff lying around. So I decided to present a Batman story, and they seemed to go for it. Foolish as they are, it's actually oddly enough, it was Frank Miller that said, why don't you guys have Neil do a Batman story? He's over there at Marvel doing this motion comic for X-Men. You ought to have him do a Batman story. So we kind of got together and decided that would be a good idea.
Now, did they approach you, or did you approach them about it?
I don't think. I think we were in the same bathroom, and somebody said, "Hey," and I said, "Sure," something like that. It's sort of how things happened. I mean, how did you get that job there? How did you? Is that a job? Do you get paid? No, I'm just asking.
Absolutely
not.
No,
you never, how does stuff happen? You know, it's just like I want to do a Batman story, and they kind of wanted me to do one. They've sort of been basing their new movies on my Batman, so giving me royalty checks and stuff that I didn't ask for. And so I think that they thought maybe it was a good. Maybe they needed some more stories for the movies.
They have been ripping you off cold, Neil.
I wouldn't say ripping me off. They've been doing me the compliment of copying my stuff.
That's a far more diplomatic way of putting it.
Well, you know, I think the stuff is, you know, the thing is that's weird is that when they started doing the cartoons, both the X-Men and Batman basically did my stories with other stories in between. And it just seems like that anytime anybody launches something, they just go to the treasure trove and pull out, you know, Ra's al Ghul and all this stuff, and then X-Men, you know, goes to the Forbidden Land, and they pull out all that stuff that was down there, and Magneto kind of reborn, and characters coming back to life, and oh, there are other characters, and they just seem to be going back to it, and I just think they woke up one morning and said, we used this like 15 times, why don't we have them do some more?
Everybody really, since you've done Batman, either in tone or in style, has really been, as near as I can tell, I don't want to say ripping you off, but is paying homage, I guess, to
I mean, if I did it right, what do you expect him to do? No, he did it right. Let's just do it another way. I wouldn't think that would be a good direction. So you kind of can't blame him, right? So my job, I reckon, is to do, like, new stuff. So I've done some new stuff for the guys to play with. So why don't you ask me about that? Come on, guys, you've done this before.
but not with you, Neil.
Not with me.
This is a whole new experience right here.
Okay, go ahead, ask me. This is the question. What are you doing new in these 12 issues, Neil, that these guys can rip you off on? How about that?
So, Neil, what are you doing new in these 12 issues that they're going to rip you off on in the future?
I'm glad you asked. Well, one of the things I'm doing is basically, you know, it's called, what's it called? I forget. Odyssey. It's called Batman Odyssey. Think about it is that it's a real Odyssey. Oh, I'm going to get serious now, so you can't, no more laughing. Okay, you're going to be serious about Batman.
Straight face.
So, a Joker? No. So it's... It's a real Odyssey. That's the thing about it is that it's a real Odyssey. So the way we do the Odyssey is, let me see, we have to create something new in literature. We'll call it a flashback. So we want to do a flashback right at the beginning of the story to Batman's first case. Okay? Now, what do we know about Batman on his first case? Let me see. He went out with guns, right?
Right.
Remember that? No, you don't remember. You're not old enough. He went out with guns.
Frank Miller.
Not okay. Frank. Yeah, Frank Miller, too. Robert Kane? Robert Kanewitz?
he did have a gun and he shot somebody in the first couple of issues.
We didn't want to. Well, that's the thing is, what we do is we have Batman going out. Now, you might have seen some of the pages reprinted, so I guess I'm not letting too many cats out of the bag here. He's telling this story to Robin because Robin has found these two Colt 45s in the Batcave and is going, huh, look at this. Where did you get these? And Batman, I guess I got to tell him the story. So now he's got to tell Robin the story about these Colt 45s. So he does. So he talks about it. Right at the first page, he says, well, this is this is the first case I was on, and you know I'm trying to be a detective, and I had decided to like be this like bat creature, but of course that was stupid. You know, am I going to dress up in a costume and pretend to be a bat? You know, that's kind of crazy. Still, I had decided to do it, so I had a costume made for the Beaux Arts. You know what the Beaux Arts is? It's a big masquerade in New York. It doesn't matter. It's a costume parade, right? So he has this costume made for the Beaux-Arts, made like a bat costume, right? And so it's got little floppy ears, and the cape just whips around him and gets in the way. And he puts on these Colt 45s because, after all, he's going to be a detective, so he's got to carry guns, right? Say yes. Right?
Yes.
Of course. What are you going to do if you're essentially an imitation cop? You're going to carry guns. So anyway, he ends up on the top of this train, and there's these bad guys at the other end of this train car, at the top of this train, and it's an oil tanker, right? A disguised oil tanker. And so he pulls out a gun, and he goes, this feels good, you know? And he's been target practicing because he's, really great because, Bruce Wayne, he's going to practice anything that he does. He's going to become the best at it. So then they spot him, right? So he throws his first batarang. Actually, it's batarang number 347 because all the other experiments didn't work very well. And he throws his batarang around the stanchion on the train car, and he swings out into open space there on the long side of the train car, and he just levels his gun at these guys. And all these guys are pulling their guns, right? And he starts shooting at them. And, of course, nobody knows this yet. He can't shoot them. He can only shoot at their guns. He can shoot at the glints of their guns, and so he does, until he swings around on top of them and he starts punching them. And we, the reader, realize he can't kill anybody because his parents were killed right in front of his face. So even if he wants to shoot somebody, he can't. So anyway, there's a point where his life is in danger, and somebody's going to blow the train car up, and he's got to shoot the guy, but the guy's got this grenade launcher in front of him, and to shoot the gun, he has to shoot the guy. And what's he going to do? Trouble. Wow. And then the guy, I can't tell you what happened.
Well, I was hoping so. I thought you were just going to tell us the whole story there, Neil. And
yeah, I had to stop there.
Well, I'm kind of glad you did.
I'll tell you another story.
Yeah.
So I'll jump from piece to piece. So I won't give you the stuff, but I'll give you pieces that are easily as interesting. After this conversation takes place, right, Batman's in the Batcave with Robin, and it turns out Man-Bat, who is not supposed to be there, especially looking like Man-Bat, and he and Robin are up in the rafters flipping around because Robin used to be a gymnast, and, of course, Man-Bat is a bat. So Batman's on the floor just a little pissed off at them because he's giving Robin the lecture about guns. So he says to Robin, why am I calling this kid Robin? He says to him, Robin, you're in a room. There's 20 guys in the room, bad guys. They all have guns. And there's you, okay? And you don't have a gun, okay? Who's going to get shot first? And Robin goes, I'm going to get shot first. I don't have a gun. Batman says, could be. On the other hand, if you're in the room, 20 guys have guns, you don't have a gun, you're not a danger to them. All the other guys in the room are a danger to them. So they're going to shoot at them because they have guns. They don't care about you. They can get you later because you don't have a gun. Robin says, well, maybe. Then Batman says, okay, same room, 20 guys with guns. You're in the room. You don't have a gun. Who survives? Robin says, I don't survive. I don't have a gun. Batman says, possible. It's quite possible. That's true. On the other hand, in that room, all of those guys are thinking about two things. They're thinking about shooting somebody else and surviving. You, only you, are in that room, and you're thinking about one thing, surviving, because you haven't got a gun. First thing you're going to do is hide. Now, some of them may hide, but they're going to hide while they're shooting. Chances are you're going to survive. Huh. And Robin says, yeah, but those guns feel so great. So that's in book. That's a little piece in book one.
So it sounds like it's just one of these stories that just really somebody should have told before.
Whoa.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Remember I said at the beginning, I've found all these little things lying around that people should have explored and they haven't?
Yeah.
Well, that's how the story starts. Now, that particular portion of that story, and there's lots of other pieces to that story, those two little portions of that story are going to lead to the final book, and they're going to have something to do with the book as it builds and as it grows and it becomes more and more powerful. You're going to look at the first book and you're going to go, well, what has this got to do with this? And what is this? This is interesting, but what's got to do with this? But all of it will build and build.
Yeah.
Do you want another little piece?
Absolutely.
Jeez. Okay.
All you want to give us.
Huh? Yeah, okay. Well, give
all you want to give us, okay. Yes.
You guys know who Dead Man is, right?
Right.
Yes.
Okay, they're kind of messing around with Dead Man.
He's currently not dead, apparently.
Yeah, well, okay, what can I say? I don't know. We're going to do Dead Man. Oh, yeah? You're going to change? Yeah, we're going to change it just a little bit. Like, what are you going to do? Well, first, he's not dead. Oh, right.
But it really is.
I think you guys are missing the point here.
Really, as far as I can tell, that's the only thing they changed. Apparently, he can still travel through time and space without anybody seeing him.
You know,
I don't know how that works.
I don't get it. But there you go. Mine is not the reason why. Mine is just to draw pictures.
Right.
Anyway. So anyway, you got Dead Man, right?
Yeah.
Batman has just sort of semi-rescued Joker because Joker's been committing a crime and some cops are going to take him off to Arkham Asylum, which is, and Batman says, no, you're not going to take him to Arkham Asylum, you're going to take him to jail. No, we're going to take him to Arkham Asylum. Well, that makes you guys criminals, so now we have another fight. So anyway, Batman has got now Joker in the Batmobile next to him, right? Mm-hmm. And he's got these nylon cuffs on him, which you and I know as readers, Joker can get out of in 5 seconds. But if he does, Batman's going to smack him in the face with the back of his hand, so he just sits there. Right? Uh-huh. Dead Man is floating above the whole thing, and he floats into the car and into the Joker. Okay? Now, it's Dead Man. The expression's not going to change too much. He kind of turns to Batman, and he says, "So, bats." So I always wanted to say that. "So, bats. You ever notice all you do is fight with clowns?" Batman turns to him. "What?" "No, I mean, I'm not kidding. I mean, the Riddler, the Joker, the Mad Hatter, the Penguin. I mean, it's a penguin. You ever notice that you're always fighting with, like, clowns? I mean, do they have a lot of clowns in Metropolis?" Batman turns and looks at him and says, "The hell are you?" "What?" "It's Joker, right?" Joker says, I'm serious here. I mean, doesn't that ever, like, make you suspicious? That somebody's, like, manipulating you?" Batman turns to him and he says, "Look, I got hundreds of criminals in jail. Regular standard criminals, they're in hundreds." "Yeah, but, you know, most of the time, you're fighting with clowns. I mean, you know, we get put into Arkham. We get out and we fight with you and do shit against you. And sorry about that."
"That's okay. We are way, way worse."
Batman says, "You're not Joker, are you?" "I'm just saying, you do a lot of fighting with clowns. I mean, if I wanted to get you out of the way, I would just throw a bunch of clowns at you. Doesn't that bother you?" "I'm not going to give you the rest of that. That's all you get. I'm sorry."
See, he's going to make me spend $3.99 this month. That's
you bet.
Great.
You bet you are.
You're going to make me break my long-standing tradition of only buying trades now. You're going to run out with the singles.
Listen, and that's the other thing, too, is it's not 6 issues, it's 12 issues. It's a year with a month break in the middle. So if you want to buy it as a trade, a lot of people are going to be talking about it. You're going to be going, "Can I borrow your comic book?"
So you're planning on staying on a monthly schedule with the release of it?
I'm on a monthly schedule. That's why I'm inking tonight.
Gotcha.
people think they know a lot about Neil Adams, but you know all the books that I did were on a monthly schedule.
Yeah.
And while they were on a monthly schedule, I was doing 5 or 10 covers a month.
Well, I just think that that's irregular for books these days.
I'm bringing back an old tradition, a monthly book. Hey, guys, it's going to be out monthly.
Let me ask you about that, Neil. You were really one of the first people to bring in realism into comics as far as
Batman looks like a guy,
a normal guy. He's not big and beefy or whatever. And a lot of the artists today have kind of taken what you've done and run with it. Like, let's say Brian Hitch, who seems to be able to do 6 issues a year if he's lucky.
If he's lucky, yeah. No, that
if he's lucky,
rough.
What do you think about some of the artists today, such as Alex Ross, Brian Hitch, who have kind of taken what you've done to run with it, and their inability to meet monthly schedules?
I don't. That's the problem with putting all that stuff in it. I mean, I know Brian Hitch, and I like Brian Hitch, but if you guys have followed Brian Hitch's career, he always put all that stuff in. He just put it in sort of like Alan Davis, only double. I mean, this is when he first started, his stuff looked like Alan Davis, only he had twice as much stuff in a panel. Now, you'd think that if he got focused and stopped doing that Alan Davis stuff, that he would kind of lighten up on all that stuff in the panel. Now he puts the stuff in the panel, only it's like backgrounds and triskelons and all this other stuff, you know, where you, or cities, you know, big, massive, double-page spreads of cities. It's a tough thing that he's gotten himself into. And he doesn't understand that, even though I may have been one of the first ones, I relied on trickery. You see, it only seems like I put all that stuff in, but I lied. Like, for example, to give you an example, I had a Green Lantern, Green Arrow book, and I have Green Arrow, the guy with the beard and the mustache, who nobody seems to be able to draw at all, because when he smiles, every time everybody draws him, he looks like a jerk.
Yeah.
He's supposed to look like a hero. Well, anyway, he was walking down the street, and there's some kids waiting to mug him. We used to mug back in those days. Nowadays, we just sing. Anyway, so they're going to mug this guy, and he comes out. And now you look at the street, and you go, yeah, I recognize that. Like, I know that neighborhood. That's like in New York on the West Side. So I put all that stuff in there to make you recognize it. And the next panel and the next page, no background at all, or a little piece of a background. But I have shown you that background on the first page. I have planted it in your mind. Yeah. So even though I do very simplified backgrounds after that, you know where you are. So I'm tricking you into thinking you're still seeing that background. That's called a trick. That's the sophisticated technical term of it. I'm tricking your mind. In psychology, modern psychology, they call that tricking your mind. I know it's a lot of syllables, but and very complicated to understand.
It's kind of a tongue twister.
Kind of a tongue twister, isn't it? Tricking your mind. So what you do is you convince people that they're seeing it, but they're not really seeing it. Now, I advise certain guys to do that a lot,
yeah,
and to focus on, you know, like the people and stuff like that. But nobody seems to, you know, look at that particular thing that Neil has tried to teach them and use it. So you get all these backgrounds that you don't care about. How many windows can you do this month? I don't know, an awful lot. Wait a second. I'm not going to draw these damn windows anymore. I'm going to do double-page spreads with 50 heroes. Oh, God. So what does the writer write when he does that? I will have a double-page spread with 50 heroes. Wait a second. You got to name the heroes. No, I named them in the... I have to name them? I don't want to name them. But you have to draw them, and they're all hitting each other. Why? I just wanted a double-page spread with heroes. I'm tired of those double-page spreads with heroes. The windows and the double-page spreads with heroes I could do without for about a year. You don't even have to draw windows anymore, and the spreads with the heroes. I don't know. Just put one in a panel. But let me relax. I'm tired. Don't you guys get tired drawing all that crap? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say all that. I don't. It's been a build up. And the three or four pages with the conversation where the artist gets tired and he uses Xeroxes. Because it's just too much talking heads, guys.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to use a Xerox. How many Xeroxes are you going to use? I don't know. Let me turn the page. Oh, three more over here, five over here. It's the same panel, it's just talking heads.
Well, you can use Photoshop to make it look like you're tweaking, like it's different each time.
You would think, you know, like flop the head. Flop it, you know, do it down. No, you can't do a down shot. Stretch it, make it look like it's in a magic mirror. Do something, you know. No, it's just Xeroxes.
Do you understand
those? There's some things that are happening today that, like, fry my brain. Stuart Amona doesn't use Xeroxes, does he?
I don't think so.
He draws.
Oh, yeah.
It's too many Xeroxes.
Do you do any digital work, Neil?
I have a studio that does digital work.
Yeah.
They do it for me. I say, do this, and they do it. and they say, don't you want to do it yourself? And I said, no, I'm afraid. I'm afraid. You do it for me. I know lots about, like, this. Like, we did, our studio did the Nasonex B commercials.
Yeah, yeah.
The first year with, I don't know who it is.
One of my friends asked me to ask you how you got him to do the voiceover for that.
I twisted his arm behind his Spanish back, and I said, you better damn do this, because it's my B. And then the advertising agency paid him $1 million. One of those two is the right answer. One of those two. I think it's my twisting his hand behind his back. But, you know, I take it under advisement. Maybe it's the other one.
Yeah.
That person was, that somebody, which I haven't named here, right? You agree? If I had revealed who it was, they would have had to give him more money. and so they warned me, don't reveal who somebody is to anybody, or the client will have to give him more money, because it's like a man, it's like sponsoring. So that's in the contract. So whoever that guy is, that sounds incredibly like Antonio Banderas, but clearly cannot be, because he would have he would be $1 million richer. did that voice?
Gotcha.
Apparently does the voice. But it's not who you think it is. I don't think it is. It's somebody else. Just coincidentally, sounds very much like a famous actor of Spanish extraction. I don't know. But he's a very cute bee, you have to say.
Yes.
Not now. He's like an announcer bee now. But the first year, you know, when he was making out with the girl and sneezing on the flowers and all that stuff, that's our year. We did that.
Yeah.
Where he's up in your face, like you turn on the TV, a commercial would come on, his bee would be in your face, and you go, whoa, what's that? That's Neil telling a story with a character right in your face. I didn't know my TV was even that big. That's true, wasn't it? I mean, when you saw that bee, whoa, right in there. I'm not going to get coffee. I want to watch this bee with that funny Spanish voice. Ah, my darling.
So we were talking digital.
That's it, but that's digital. Yeah. It's all done with the digital.
Absolutely, yeah.
I designed it. Mm-hmm. I gave it to my digital guy.
Yeah.
And he traced it, and I said, that's wrong, and if you do it again, I'm going to screw your head up. And he said, yes, anything you say, Mr. Adams, I will do whatever you say. You're paying me. I will do it. And then we did it right, and I made a little storyboard, and we made this little cartoon, and we did it. That's what our studio did that year, and that put money in the bank. It's very nice.
Yeah.
That bee has been very, very nice to continuity, I can tell you that.
And so how did continuity get started up?
Oh. At the beginning, it went all the way to here. Do you know, have you seen the latest thing that we've been doing?
I'm not sure.
Is that the Taco Bell commercial?
The Taco Bell commercial.
Yes, the super delicious ingredient force.
That's right, the super delicious ingredient force. In my opinion, the first homosexual commercial cartoon character is in that super. he's Incredible Rice. What's that noise? What's all that? Great character.
Okay, so it wasn't my imagination. He
no, it wasn't. No, he's intellectual, homosexual. He is definitely there. We had to change another one because he sounded a little too much like a governor of California who had big muscles, and we had to change that. But we kept the light fellow. And the commercial is great, isn't it? It's like, I don't know, 4 minutes long. And they do that little thing at the end, you know, and I'll tell you what else is dangerous, electricity. But it's great. Everybody loves them. And we might have, you know, we're talking to the advertising agency, and at our booth, we might have some of those characters from Taco Bell. But that's like one of the latest jobs that we're working on. And it's what it is. It's like a, it's not a commercial. It's an entertainment commercial. You know, it's like 4 minutes long, and it's funny, and yeah. And that you're selling Taco Bell, but you're selling Taco Bell based on all the ingredients. You know, you find something that does make sense, and then you sell. Like, first of all, one of the things I do personally like about Taco Bell, and I'm not trying to sell it, is you get a lot of different stuff, you know. You spend $2 and you get all this beans and stuff that make you fart, and all this, the beef and the vegetables and all this stuff. You go into a burger place, you get, you know, a burger. Same yeah. money. So it is kind of cool, you know, right there. And that's what they're doing. They're saying, oh, okay, so we'll make all our characters into, all our ingredients into superhero characters. And so I said, so what is that, like 7 or 8 characters? They said, no, it's about 12 or 13. Oh, so I'm going to have to create 12 or 13 characters? Well, maybe more. So I can see this growing. And they haven't even started on the cheeses yet. So they got at least 3 cheeses. So anyway, we're doing it, and it's a lot of fun in the studio. It's like we're doing a cartoon show, but it's, you know, the Super Ingredients Force. Super Ingredients Force.
How'd you come up with some of the names like Fantastic Rice and Incredibean?
I didn't do it at all. I didn't. Look, first of all, in advertising, you don't come up with anything. It's the advertising agency that comes up with stuff.
Yeah.
And it's the client that approves it. And when it gets down to you, if it hasn't turned to crap, then you get to have fun and do what, you know, their idea. But it's all their ideas. And they're like children with toys at this advertising agency, because usually they have to write the regular, you know, advertising crap, and they're doing these cartoons, and they're like, oh, this is great. I haven't had so much fun since I got into advertising, man. This is really cool. So they're having a great time, and they're creating all these characters. It doesn't matter if I agree with them or don't agree with them. I just do it, you know, and this stuff goes out. Just turns out that this stuff is terrific, you know. It's like a great bit.
Yeah.
It's like Jerry Seinfeld and Superman, you know. They did a series of commercials like that I had nothing to do with.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like that. It's what they call viral advertising. And so our studio, you know, gets in. First, the other thing, too, is, like, people will get me involved in that because I am the living legend Neil Adams. Duh, right? So they come to me and they say, oh, Neil Adams, the living legend, man, can you do these ugly cartoons? I say, sure, I can do anything. I just have to slam my hand in the door, and I can do anything. And so, it's a great arrangement. It's a great relationship. These guys are, you know, having a great time. They were actually, in fact, the writer and the art director were here today with the producer doing something else in New York, and we were talking about this stuff. And of course, they're enough fans that they wanted to see Batman pages. Here's Batman pages. Go look at them. I'll go have a cup of coffee. See, you're being too entertained. You're totally lost. You don't have a list of questions.
Yeah. I forget that we're actually interviewing somebody.
I know. We're in a coffee shop kicking around jackpots. I get it.
That's how the best interviews are, is when you forget you're even asking questions.
Yeah, well,
just for association.
And that's why I don't mind doing interviews if the guys at the other end can just relax a little bit.
Oh, hell yeah. I'm all for letting you talk so I don't have to, Neil.
Well, there you go. So I'll tell you another Batman story.
I'm listening.
Okay. I'm looking at a page here, and you know how you say Batman, one of the things that Neil did was made an athletic Batman. I'm looking at a Batman who is not athletic. In fact, he's got muscles on his muscles,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And he's a Batman, only he's not our Batman. He's another Batman. He is a Neanderthal Batman. Why, Neil? Because we went back in time? Yes, we do that all the time when we do Batman. No, we didn't go back in time. He's a surviving Neanderthal. Oh, he's in a block of ice? No, he's not in a block of ice and we thawed him out. How can you have a Neanderthal Batman? Well, he lives today on Earth. he lives in a community that where he is the Batman of that community. Where can that be? Ah, but Neil, you're doing an epic adventure of Batman called Odyssey. So Batman must be taking a journey somewhere on the Earth where he can meet this guy who thinks that Batman is his hero, even though he looks like he could rip Batman apart. But of course he can't because Batman is so athletic and all that. So where could that place be? See, you're not a denizen of the internet like you think you are. Because if you were, you would know where that place is.
Well, absolutely no, I'm not.
Okay, there you go. Well, you got to get on the internet. Okay, what if I said this? What if I said this? Ra's al Ghul, who is the main, well, one of the two main antagonists in this story, is the king of the underworld. What would you assume I meant?
Oh, goodness.
The weeds of crime bear bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The shadow knows. Oh, you got a lot of surprises coming to you, buddy. I got to tell you. There's a lot of stuff in this story.
Well, let me ask you, Neil, which do you prefer doing? Do you prefer doing the commercials or the comics? Which do you find to be more fulfilling?
Oh, commercials are so cool, man. I like to do them more than anything. They're just so great. Comic books, you know, they're so trite and everything. Who wants to do that? I love to do comic books.
Fuck, man? There
comic
we go. We got it out of
best.
The way. Use it all
comic
you want.
Comic books are the best. Are you kidding? Is anything better than comic books? If you put the greatest artist in the world together with the greatest writer in the world and they did a graphic novel, it would be the greatest piece of art in the world, wouldn't it?
Possibly.
That's what comic books are about, man. Comic books are the new art form. Just don't tell the French because they're just going to ruin it. Those damn French. Don't let the French know because they mess everything up. I had a conversation with some French guys and they said, "Well, Mr. Adam, you know that America has created the three, contributed three art forms to the culture of the world." I said, "What were they?" "Well, of course, there is jazz, and there is the musical comedy, and there is comic books." That is the contribution to the world of America. No kidding. Comic books are in there? Well, yes, with musical comedy and the jazz. Oh, are you going to screw it up just like you screwed up jazz? French geeks, are you jerks? You take all our jazz musicians and treat them like kings and they come back and they can't blow a note? You're going to mess up comic books like that? Well, we appreciate comic books. I had a guy, listen to this. This is great. I had this interviewer. They actually have television shows in France about comic books where they talk seriously about comic books. Ooh, well, comic books, you know, to the culture. So anyway, this guy comes. He wants to come and he wants to interview me about comic books from France. I said, well, okay, you going to bring a camera? Well, no, I bring the crew. The crew. A whole crew? Well, you know, a small crew, three or four, five people. Okay, fine. So they come in, right? And the Frenchies are smoking cigarettes. And walk in the door smoking. Hey, out of my studio. I have people working here. I have humans. They don't like cigarettes. They will kill me. They will leave you alone, but they will kill me. They'll say, Neil. When is the smoke going to clear out of here? We'll come back later after we have a long cup of coffee. So put out the cigarettes. Okay, they put out the cigarettes. So we find a place for them to interview slightly after hours, right? Because the guy says, well, you know, I'd like to smoke the cigarette when you do the interview. I mean, can we go into some place? We can go on the fire escape and do it, but not here. Well, maybe later we can do it. Yes, we'll have a cup of coffee. Can you make a cappuccino? Well, in fact, I can. Guess what? So we have a soundstage, right? So we waited till like 7 o'clock, and we let them set up in the soundstage. And so they set up, and they have, you know, the light from the one side, but not the other side, so you fall into shadow. Very dramatic. My cameraman, he feels very strongly that the side is much better. You don't want to put some fill on the other side? No, no, it's not necessary. Okay, fine. So the guy sits back, right? And I let him light his cigarette, because it doesn't bother me. Bothers everybody in the world but me.
If anybody smoked near my sound equipment, I would freak out.
Right, you're crazy, man. And your sound equipment, it's just sound equipment, not even human. Oh, wait, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say that.
It's okay, it understands.
I'm sorry. Sound equipment, no, you are human, I know, baby. Okay, so he sits back, right, and I'm lit from the side, looking very dramatic, and he says, he's got the cigarette, and he kind of does this wave with the cigarette, you know, kind of waves the cigarette. And he says, Monsieur Adams, I just want to ask you how you personally feel about your contribution to the comic book medium and its effect on the culture of the world. I said, you French prick. You and everyone like you are going to mess up comic books. We're going to have crap comic books because you guys are going to tell us that it's art. You're going to ask us questions about its contributions to our culture. We're going to get all self-conscious, and you're going to screw it up on us. It's just like rock and roll. You're going to screw it up. It's just like how you guys screwed up the Beatles. You screwed up Elvis. You screwed it all up, and you screwed up jazz, and now you're going to screw up comic books because of this lousy French attitude. He goes quiet, but you can see the whites around his eyes. And then he says, Neil Adams, I know you are joking with me. Now tell me.
Well, now, in his defense, though, we did take the croissant and give them the croissant, so we screwed that up.
That's right. We mispronounce every word they have. You know what the French say? You know what the French say about English? English is just French mispronounced.
Well, let me ask you, how many of those kind of interview requests do you get a year? I mean, considering you're the living legend Neil Adams.
Well, there's you.
Yes, but after this, we will be requesting this interview for the next 8 years of your life.
You guys can pedal this one.
We're ready to make you a monthly segment, Neil.
you're gonna have your engineers peddling copies on the corner. Curses on the air. Reveal secrets of the Joker. Talks about French interviewers. Ah, very spicy. Turn the card over. Ah, what's on the back?
I don't even know where I was at in my question list. That's why I don't care.
I had a list here, and it must have fallen under the table. Man, I haven't been so happy since the pigs ate my sister. God, that's Neil Adams saying that. Holy cow, did the pigs really eat his sister? I don't think so. He's just saying that.
I thought you were talking about the time that the pigs ate my sister.
No, no.
No.
Pigs don't usually eat sisters because there's brothers around that beat them with a stick. Don't eat my sister, God damn you. And they run to the other side of the thigh squealing. But you can feed them, you know, traveling salesmen.
Yes, yeah.
Oh yeah.
The kind that no one will miss.
That's right. And you get 10 points for that. Hey, mister, do you have any relatives living in the next county? No? Really? Okay, the pig's going to eat. God, how do we get here? Doesn't sound like Batman. Maybe this is Porky Pig. I don't know. It's Bugs. You know, I'm looking under that hat. That farmer looks like Bugs Bunny.
Oh, Lord.
Okay. Neil, can I ask you a serious question for a second?
Well, as long as I have permission, you sign this little slip of paper that I don't have to give you a serious answer. You got it.
Well, I actually have a serious question. I saw an interview with Stan Lee where he said just that he believes that the writer who dreams the character up is the sole creator. And that artist is really just somebody who is hired.
I think that's a soul question. I think that's a soul question. He was actually answering a soul question because Stan is a soul entertainer, you see. He's a soul. Right. He has soul, see. Now, if all that's true, then I guess the notes along the side of those pages of Jack Kirby makes him the creator.
Hmm. All right.
Because they are written, and they are the notes. You know, I don't really think Stan believes that. I think that Stan is forced to say those things because people attack Stan unfairly. I mean, I think Stan was just as much a writer when he was writing those five plots about Ogog, the Mogog, and Thing Fang Foom that he did before Jack Kirby came along and helped him invent all those comic book characters.
Right.
Come on, pay attention here. You know what Stan used to write before the superheroes? Remember those? You ever get a hold of those comic books? Thing Fang
Journey into Mystery, Fin Fang Foom, Grog, the Creature from Beyond. Yeah.
Wait a second. You can say Thing Fang Foom, but you really have to say Thing Fang Foom, the dragon with the big diaper. Because that's my favorite part. It's the big diaper. I love that. No, I think Stan was the nephew of the publisher, and he was in a very fortunate position to become the editor of a series of books that really sort of didn't attract too much attention until Jack Kirby convinced Stan that maybe Jack would be better off doing full-length books instead of these six-page stories, and somehow convinced Stan to take the old four people fly into space and come back monsters into a much longer story and call it Fantastic Four. And that started a trend. And Stan was as much a part of that as Jack, because Jack had tried the same idea at Harvey Comics and at Archie Comics, and it had failed. And with Stan behind it and with Jack and them working together, I think they created Marvel Comics. And I think it's just as bad not to give credit to Stan as it is not to give credit to Jack. So I deny that Stan, that the intent of what you quoted was exactly that, that Stan would take full credit for it. I think that in his heart of hearts, and I have spoken to Stan. I was the vice president of the Academy of Comic Book Arts when Stan was the president. And my job was to remind Stan of who everybody was, because he didn't have a very good memory of his artists. And I talked to Stan on a fairly regular basis. And in fact, when I went to Marvel from D.C., not from D.C., but I went to Marvel also, Stan's invitation was, what do you want to do? And when he wanted me to do two Thor books, or do a Thor book with him, I said, well, I'd rather do a two-parter. And he said, fine. And when we came in for a meeting, he said, what do you want to do? To which I said, well, do you have a story in mind? He said, no, anything you want to do, Neil. You know how we do it here at Marvel. And how we did it here at Marvel was called the Marvel Way, because Stan was so busy dialoguing so many books that if he had writers, or artist writers, who could create a story, then it was to his advantage to let them go ahead and do it. So Jack did it. Jim Steranko did it. To a greater or lesser degree, other people did it. I think Don Heck did it. I certainly did it when I was at Marvel, when I did stuff at Marvel. And I'm going to be doing a Wolverine series, a five-part Wolverine series. Ah, see, you heard that here. For Marvel. And I'm going to be writing it and drawing it, and I don't think, there's going to be any problem. I think that it was an evolving... Let me just tell you this. Marvel Comics was about as big as my lobby here at Continuity when I first went up there. Partitions got in the way of everybody. They had to kind of scrunch their shoulders. It was a small place, and they were just surviving on Stan Lee's dialoguing every book that Jack Kirby could come up with. and Stan could come up with.
Yeah.
So I don't know what Stan created. I just know that the combination of Stan Lee and Jack Kirby made some of the best comic books out there. And now we're seeing them on the movie screen. So to revisit history and to try to pull it apart quite so much, I think does it a disservice. These people, both of these people are people that I know and I like. I think they're both creative in their own ways and tremendously important to the comic book business. And I will say this about Stan. I consider Stan to be a wonderful host and spokesman for comic books.
Oh, absolutely.
He's getting up there in age, but I would say even the most callous Stan and people who may, you know, stand for Jack Kirby and all the rest of this and say blah, 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 I think that when Stan is going to be on the air, they go right to their TV set and they want to hear the interview and they want to hear what Stan says. And Stan never makes us ashamed that we're in the comic book business.
He is a good carnival barker for comics. That is correct.
Yeah, I think that he is. So there you got your damn answer.
Well, I feel like a shit for even asking the question now.
Good.
Now we can call it an interview.
Yeah. Well, we got the boring part over. You asked me something interesting.
You want to tell another Batman story?
Sure. Absolutely.
I'm saving the good stuff for last.
Okay, so let me see. I gotta rumble through my Batman stories because I don't have a page in front of me to tell. Oh, here's Batman on a wharf, right? And down comes Man-Bat. Now we've just met Man-Bat in the previous issue, right? And as Man-Bat comes down, and what's happened is Talia has stolen an album of pictures from Wayne Manor, in which she starts to show them to Bruce Wayne Batman. She knows he's Bruce Wayne Batman because somehow her father broke into the Batcave because he figured out where it was. No, he didn't. That's just bullshit, and we will discover in this issue that it's not true. He did it by accident. Why? Because he's the king of the underworld. What the hell does that mean? I don't know. Anyway, so Talia is showing him the pictures, and guess what? There's little Bruce Wayne and little Talia. Oh, as kids. Playing together. And there's their dads. Best-o buddies. Remember, Ra's al Ghul has the Lazarus pit. He can stay young. Now he's looking, Bruce Wayne is looking at Talia with him playing as kids, right? And here's Ra's al Ghul with his dad, arms around each other. What were they doing? Well, they were kind of in the oil business together. The oil business? Dun, 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 dun! This isn't good. The oil business? Wait a second. Wayne wasn't in the oil business, but he made machinery for the oil company. And down comes Man-Bat and steals the album. Steals the album. It's just an album. But Man-Bat looks very, very powerful. It's not really Man-Bat. It's a new Man-Bat. It's a big Man-Bat. It's somebody who doesn't like Batman at all and works for Ra's al Ghul and has taken the serum and become Big Man Bat. Who can that be? Huh. Let me see. Should I reveal it? No, I've already given you enough clues. I've given you enough clues. You have all the clues there. Works for...
Bang.
You should know it. You should know it. I'm not going to tell you. So anyway, knockdown, drag-out fight happens on the pier, and guess who comes out to help Batman? Batman comes to help Batman. Who?
That's unique.
Batman comes to help Batman. Really? Holy shit. And then a giant bat flies over them, lands on top of Man-Bat, drives a spear in his chest, and he goes over the pier. Boom! Batman looks around and goes, we got too many bats on this pier. What the hell's going on? Aquaman steps out of the shadows. Batman looks down. That wasn't a bat. That was a manta ray. No, excuse me. That was a stingray. And it drove its spear into the chest of Man-Bat. And Aquaman comes over and says, are you letting these guys walk all over you? Batman says to him, you just killed him. You just killed him. I don't want friends who kill people. He doesn't quite say that. And Aquaman looks down on him and says, hey, Shorty, because Aquaman looks so solid. Batman jumps off the pier to rescue Man-Bat, the new Man-Bat. And then there's a double-page spread that you can see publicized to find out exactly what happened after that. Oh, my. Is Neil having fun?
God, I hope so.
I am having
it sounds, fun. It sounds like it doesn't matter who bought it. You had fun doing it.
Sure. Of course. Yeah. But all this stuff has been like Aquaman. I mean, I say Aquaman as being a really tough bruiser because he can, you know, put up with, you know, pressures under the sea and stuff like that. He's really got to be some tough guy. And he is not above killing. Not above killing at all, because life is hard. So I got him looking pretty tough.
Yeah.
I kind of like him the way I did him.
Well, he sees the life cycle in the sea. And
yeah, it's pretty rough, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we're kind of distanced from it, unless you live on the farm and you have that traveling salesman come by.
Yeah.
Mr. Traveling Salesman, how would you like to be part of the life cycle of a pig? What?
Back to the pigs.
What does that mean? Here, have a big old meal.
Neil, have you ever seen your Wikipedia entry? Have you ever read it?
At various times. They think I'm crazy in some places and all this stuff. Most of the stuff is wrong, and, you know, that's crazy. I don't know. I don't pay attention to that very much. Why? What does it say that's interesting?
Well, one question it had, and it said citation. It said one of the things it said that it needed a citation on was that you did some movie work at one point.
Yeah, I shot a film in New York. Really didn't do much with it. We sold it to the sleaziest, weirdest company in the world. We sold it to the people that have I can't think of it. If I had it at the top of my head, you guys would actually laugh. It's this, like, guy that is all scarred up, and he carries a mop and a pail, and he's, what is he?
Toxic Avenger.
The guys who own Toxic Avenger bought it, and they've sold it overseas. They haven't sold it here. Yeah. I know what they're waiting to do. They're waiting for me to do a real movie, and then they'll release it. I'm thinking that. That's what I'm thinking. Hey. But, yeah, I experimented with film, and I, you know, went to film school in New York, and I did the whole thing. And I probably will be directing films. Yeah. I have no doubt, very little doubt. They better let me direct films. Jump up and down and turn purple.
Joel, it doesn't say anything on the Wikipedia page about Neil owning a pig farm, does it?
No, it does.
Let's see. I think I printed it out.
It doesn't say anything about you hopping around like spit on a griddle either, but that's what you do.
Let's see. Continuity and creators' rights, awards and honors.
Blah, blah, blah.
Quotes from Bob McLeod, Krusty Bunkers, nothing about a pig farm, no.
Okay.
Well, there you go.
You want to talk about any of that other stuff, Neil, that Joel just mentioned?
Well, we did for a while have a thing called the Krusty Bunkers.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you why we call it the Krusty Bunkers. It's, you know, have you ever had one of these things where a phrase kind of passes around at a particular time, and then years later you bring it to mind and it's stupid?
Absolutely.
Well, that's what the Krusty Bunkers are. And it didn't occur to me that Krusty Bunkers are like guys that were in your bunk, you know, in your bunk at camp.
Yeah.
So when I was hearing this, I'm thinking, what the hell does that mean? I don't understand what that means. But what we did was different people like Howard Chaykin came to me and said, Neil, they're going to give this to Mike Fafford and the Gray Mauser to Vinnie Coletta. And, I'll never get anywhere. I said, well, that's probably true. He said, can you volunteer to ink it? And I said, no, I can't volunteer to ink it. I don't have time. I have stuff to do. And he said, oh, please, please, please. So I went to the editor and I said, look, I would like to ink Fafford and the Gray Mauser, but I'm not going to ink it. I'm going to get people to ink it. But anything is better than Vinny. And he looked at me with that, whoever that editor was, looked at me with that kind of editor eyes and said, okay, just have it in a month. So I said, fine. And I would take it. And so what would happen is we were on 48th Street at the time. People used to kind of come and hang out at Continuity on 48th Street. We don't have that now. We have somebody at the door with a shotgun. But now...
Good to know.
Yeah, you can't come on in here. So at 48th Street, guys would come in all the time, come in off the elevator and drift to the back, and some of them who were of the type that would smoke marijuana, others would just go back and talk, and people would come up front and try to pretend that nobody was in the back smoking marijuana, and I would go back and yell at them really loud and take their marijuana away and flush it down the toilet. And then, as I was walking away, they'd say, "Don't worry, I got more." He's gone crazy again. So anyway, they would come and hang out, and I'd say, "Okay, you're hanging out here, you know, and drinking the coffee and eating the coffee cake. Sit down and ink something." And so whoever would come by, I would have them ink stuff. And they'd say, "Well, do I get money for this?" "No, you don't get money. You get the privilege of being a continuity." "All right, I'll give you some money. I'll break it up. You know, you'll just make a list of what the hell you do, you crybaby, and I'll figure out from the rate how much you get. It's not going to be much." And so guys would come and they would ink, like, "Oh, can I ink the girls?" "No, you can't ink the girls. You suck on girls. Ink the background, you jerk." And then somebody would come by, and they, like, Jeff Jones would come by, and he'd go, "What do you want me to ink?" "I ink the girls, Jeff, the girls, because you make them beautiful." So what I would do is I'd sort of pass it out to whoever came in according to their strengths, you see. So by the end, even though the job would look like a little disassociated, it would still be an excellent job because of the people who could do good this or good that were doing this and that. And under the cruel whip of Neil, who would say, "Don't do that! I'll kill you if you do that." So in the end, we sort of inked a bunch and saved a bunch of guys' stuff, and everybody had a good time. And Larry Hama he went to the phone book and he got this a drawing out of the phone book of a plumber, an ad for a plumber, and he had like this running plumber. You know, you get this profile of a plumber kind of running with the plumber's helper. You know, and he replaced the plumber's helper with a fishing rod or some whatever the hell it was, and T-squares and stuff like that, and made up a bunch of T-shirts with this little running guy with all this stuff falling off of him, and it was the Krusty Bunkers T-shirt. So anybody that worked on one of these things would get a Krusty Bunkers T-shirt, whatever portion of the page they did, you know, $8, $14, whatever the hell it was.
Yeah.
It was great fun until, you know, we sort of started to get better inkers in the field and things got calmed down a little bit. We kind of saved jobs and we kind of got people's careers started because, you know, you can't, if you look at bad inking, then and try to look past it to see whether or not the artist is any good, it's very hard to see. You know, bad inking can cover up a struggling young artist's good work.
Absolutely.
So we inked Alan Weiss, we inked Chaykin, we inked Frank Brunner, we had a couple of comics for Frank Brunner, for Doctor Strange, and other things here and there. And, you know, it sort of helped the field, you know, got things moving, got new younger guys in and gave them jobs. And it was sort of the beginning of the renaissance of, it's so serious now, a renaissance. He said renaissance. "Oh, what does renaissance mean, Mr. Adams? You in the back of the class?" "I don't know, teacher. It means doing it over again." "I don't know. Doric and Ionic and Corinthian columns is what it means." So we had some Doric, Ionic, and Corinthian column in Howard Chaykin and all those guys. So it was a way to move the business, you know, and make it more challenging and more fun and make a community out of it. That's why when people talk seriously about comic books and say, "Oh, is this bad or what's going on?" I don't mind, you know, I'll go and fight the fight for the royalties and the credits and the return of the original art. But, you know, you really can't take comic books all that seriously because really it's rock and roll.
Yeah.
I mean, if anybody thinks it's not rock and roll, they're out of their minds. It's great fun, it's creative, it's totally enjoyable, and anybody that puts a burn on it is out of their minds.
Yeah.
That's why you guys are doing the shit that you're doing, right?
Absolutely.
Because it's cool. You love it.
Yeah. I don't know if it's cool.
When else are we ever going to get time to talk about Neil Adams?
There you go.
You know, and get to pick your brain, or Bob McLeod, or you know, any of the other people we've talked to.
There you go.
I will point out that if we weren't recording this and we didn't have this show, that you would probably still be talking to Joel, and he would pretend like he has you on mic.
Yeah, right. And that will not be the first time that ever happened. Yeah, but then there'd be some, then there'd be somebody who would be behind him saying, "Turn the mic on. What's the matter with you? Are you out of your mind? Get that damn mic going." Yeah, engineer walking out. Leave his hot mic behind.
Because it's not like Adam has ever recorded somebody and didn't get the responses to questions.
Yeah.
No, I
whatever.
Know. Isn't that tough, man? You start. Hey, how do you feel about? It was okay. did you feel you were making a creative contribution? Sure.
Yeah.
What was that creative contribution? I drew it.
Yeah, I've had a couple of those interviews.
Yeah, isn't that fun?
Yeah.
Isn't that fun? No.
Well, I've had interviews where he's answered all the controversial questions, but he wouldn't answer any of the straightforward questions.
Yeah, well, there's some guys that get real bitchy. I don't know why. They just get all bitchy on things. I can imagine some people. I might be able to name some of those people. You know, it's not like some people are sort of like pulling a string, you know, and they just got to unwind. Pardon me, sir, you're not in your psychiatrist's office. We don't need to hear who you hate and how they messed you up.
We don't want to see on the doll where the bad man touched you.
Yeah, we don't want all that. We're doing a comic book interview. They screwed me. They destroyed my life. You know who I really hate? They took that book away from me, and my wife left me. And that's why she left me. Well, maybe that's not why. It's maybe because I had a very bad... Oh, well, I don't want to talk about that. Who's going to get coffee? You don't get coffee when you're talking to me. What is that? I'm thirsty. I had to get something to drink. There's a Diet Coke way over here.
Hey! In part one, that is the point right before Terrence joins up into the conversation. It's a good stopping point. Part two, sometime after I return from New York Comic Con... Plenty more to discuss. For instance, Neil paying, what, $200 to learn how to kill a cow with his bare hands. That's right. Listen for part two.